couple months, we're starting to see that one China policy be eroded by various steps by the Biden administration, but also in particular by Congress. Yesterday in the Washington Post, Congresswoman Elaine Luria of Virginia released an op-ed saying that the Congress should pass a war powers declaration to come to defend Taiwan. These are exactly the type of changes to the status quo that are contributing to the destabilizing dynamics and, in fact, are the quickest way that the U.S. and China could go to war over the next coming years.
And we just have less than a minute, but I wanted to ask you about how does the Biden administration reconcile its increasing a tendency toward conflict with China at the same time that American corporations seek to gain greater access to the Chinese market and to produce more goods, these American corporations in China?
Sure. So I would note that, in fact, the business community has been one of the few constituencies in Washington that has been pushing for a more managed and controlled relationship. But the reason that the Biden administration has embraced the Trump administration's line on China is because if you look at every other constituency in Washington, the defense community, the media, various parts of the federal government have been transformed recently. All of them are buying into the line. And so there's this overwhelming wave of support for escalating tensions with China. And so this is why we've seen the Biden administration do what it does and why I suspect it will continue going forward.
Well, we're going to do part two and post it online at democracynow.org. Ethan Paul with the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft will link to his piece, Biden Doesn't Understand the New Cold War. That's it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe. Wear a mask.
Vaccines have been around for hundreds of years. They helped eliminate smallpox from the face of the earth, and they're well on the way to doing the same with polio. Those were once devastating diseases, you understand, and now, thanks to vaccines, you don't even have to worry about them. What do you say, Brian? Should we show them how it works?
Well, I have a date with that chick that works at the bowling alley.
Anyway, vaccines protect us from illnesses by activating our immune response without the danger of actual infection, thereby training the body to fight off the real thing. Some of the COVID vaccines work by exposing your immune system to proteins which resemble the spike protein of the virus but cannot infect you. The vaccine stimulates your immune system to make antibodies against the virus, mimicking what happens when you get COVID, except that you don't get sick with the vaccine. The mRNA vaccines actually use the genetic code of the virus to create a pretend version of the spike protein.
Hi, I look like the virus, but I'm not the virus.
When the real virus tries to attack your body, these pre-made circulating immune proteins are already available, coded to recognize the virus and at the ready to fight back. They essentially find, bind to, and kill the invading virus, drastically reducing the chances that you'll get sick. The vaccine also results in the creation of memory cells that will fight the virus in years to come.
Memory cells, right. I'm glad you said that. I was going to touch on it.
Don't do that. So the more quickly we all get vaccinated, the more quickly we can all get back to doing the things we love safely. As of now, billions of COVID vaccines have been administered safely to people around the world. The common side effects from the COVID vaccines are generally mild and last a few days. But do you know what can have serious long-term side effects? COVID. Getting the shot not only protects him, but also the people around him. But even more importantly, if the virus is allowed to spread through an unvaccinated population, it could mutate into a variant that the vaccines might not protect against. And then we're right back where we started. Gal Gadot singing Imagine. We cannot let that happen.
Well, you know, I just realized this is like one of those Schoolhouse Rocks. Except, you know, without the rock.
Yeah, it's like school. Way to end strong, Brian.
You know what, Doc? I changed my mind. Something inside of me tells me I ought to get the shot.
I think you're going to be very happy you did.
Okay, just give me fair warning, because I'm very afraid of needles, and also some guy on the radio said...
You're done.
Is that it? That was easy. Is that a Bart Simpson Band-Aid?
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi, everyone.
Well, we sound a little funny, don't we?
It's true. We have masks on.
And we have masks on because it's required by law. No, you didn't miss anything. You're not required to wear masks all the time now, but you are required to wear masks when you're on a train. And no, we're not on a train either, but we are in a train station waiting for a train. And when you are in an Amtrak station, you're required to wear a mask. And so here we are recording radio and wearing masks. Not a big deal. In fact, I think I sound a little better.
It might act as an impromptu pop stopper.
Yeah, you know what? Popping peas is like the worst thing you can do on the radio. And I didn't really pop those peas like I normally would.
Yeah, I don't perfectly predict my peas, but perhaps it'll... Okay, I'm done. I tested it. Yeah, no, it sounds great. I think we're okay. Let's try it.
All right, you want to go with this? All right, so here we are. We're in Chicago Union Station. We've just spent a bunch of days in Chicago. I was a speaker at the ThoughtCon conference, the hacker conference. And what we've decided to do is kind of take the pulse of America. God, I sound like Dan Rather. We're just heading out on the road, so to say, road and rails, to see how America is doing with this whole COVID thing. We took a train out here from New York. What do you want to say about that? The Lake Shore Limited, I believe, is what it was called.
Well, it was a longer overnight trip, obviously, kind of meandering into the darkness upstate, and you come in and end up during the day. You're right near, Indiana, and you come in towards the city of Chicago, right along a lot of that old steel and industry, smelting, of course, all those industrial operations.
We've done that before. Can you hear the announcement? Hang on, let's see if we can hear the announcement. Yeah, nobody can understand a word that's being said, but that's a train station. You never understand a word of what's being said. But yes, the Lake Shore Limited, unfortunately, it doesn't go directly to Chicago. It goes up to Albany. It kind of goes all around New York State before it comes down by the Great Lakes and cuts over through Indiana, Ohio, and then up into Illinois. It would be nice if it just went directly across the U.S. I'm not quite sure why it has to be this way. I don't, just to step aside for a second, I don't know why we can't just install high-speed rail on the interstate right-of-ways. You know, like maybe a track on each side or maybe something down the median or... I don't know, but that's pretty straight. So you don't expect people in their cars to drive all the way up to Albany and Schenectady and Rochester and Syracuse and Buffalo. Literally, it goes through all those cities before you come back down again and hit Toledo and you're on your way to Chicago.
It's a huge survey of the whole area and those towns in between, and you really do see a lot of the state in the process.
Yeah, I don't mind. I don't mind seeing all the scenery, but if you're looking to get there in a decent amount of time, not the best way to do it. And of course, the rail itself isn't electric; it's diesel, so that takes a little bit longer as well. We could do so much better; we really could. But all that aside, I love the train. It was amazing. We got a little roomette because, believe it or not, the train was completely sold out. Couldn't get a full size room, so you get these little roomettes, which actually, in some ways, they feel better. Because when the beds aren't made up, you have basically two seats facing each other with a table in between. So you wind up with this little cubicle that is yours, and you have a door that closes, and you feel very secure. You know, you're not in fear of being exposed to somebody else's coughing or something like that. They say you're supposed to wear a mask at all times, but they're very clear you don't have to wear a mask when you're inside your room. So that's great. You know, if you're on a passenger seat, obviously you have to wear a mask the whole time because you're around other people. But if you're traveling and you're inside a room, then you know, I can't think of a safer way other than, you know, being in your own cubicle in the car, which is nowhere near as much fun. There's no better way to travel as far as going from one point to another.
Yeah, and we were able to see some improvements on the interiors. There had been new coverings on a lot of the seating and in the various cars. It was a very long train. It attaches to that second one.
In Albany. What it does is it goes up to Albany, meets the train from Boston, and connects to the train from Boston, becomes twice as long.
And in that process, you get the sense that this this really is a cross-country or a regional train as it gains more passengers. But the ride was comfortable and safe. You just adhere to when you're passing people by in common areas, and it worked out. It was overall quite pleasant. One thing I did notice, which is similar to or along the lines of the high speed thing, is this other track when we were coming across.
Yeah, where did we notice that? That started right at South Bend, Indiana, I believe.
Yes, it did. There was this small siding of rails, and I saw overhead wires, which to me was fascinating. And it was bright copper colored, like it had been recently installed or it was otherwise newer and well maintained.
And the train we were on didn't have overhead wires because, as I mentioned, that was diesel. So, yeah, we were wondering, okay, so what is this next to us that has overhead wires? Is it some kind of light rail system or trolley, something like that?
Exactly. It was such a curiosity, and we just sort of followed it and tried to pick up as much of where it was leading, and eventually it just sort of split off to the north, I guess, of where we were headed.
It just kept going, and we figured, you know, if this is some kind of light rail system, I mean, how far away from South Bend are people commuting to get to South Bend? And, we looked it up, and the answer really kind of surprised us.
It's fascinating. It comes here to Chicago, Illinois, believe it or not.
It does. It's what's known as an interurban rail system. There aren't very many of those left in the country, but that's where you hook one city up with a totally different city. And that's kind of what Amtrak does. But that particular route, I don't know the whole history. I'm sure you can look it up on Wikipedia and find out all about it. It declined to join with Amtrak when Amtrak started back in the 70s. So there is this little rail that exists. I think it's like a two-hour ride that goes from South Bend, Indiana, all the way to Chicago. And what we wanted to do, we saw that it went to Millennium Station in Chicago. Now, I mentioned we're in Union Station right now. We never heard of Millennium Station. So we figured, okay, wow, there's another train station in Chicago for long-distance rail. We have to track that down. And, in fact, we even found a stop on the L, which is the equivalent of the subway, that said this is Millennium Station, where you get what they call the South Shore Line, and that's what that line is called. The South Shore Line goes from Chicago to South Bend. So we went to that stop, and, okay, you know, I'm going to say a bit of criticism here towards Chicago. They are sign impaired, and what that means is there are many opportunities where a sign would help you in many ways, like, you know, this is over here, that's over there, you know, basically all kinds of directional things that would help. And when we got off that particular train, yes, there was a sign that said this is the stop for Millennium Station, and we came downstairs to street level, and there was no other sign. There we are in the street, underneath the L, the train's above us, the street's right there. There's all these cops around because it's, I think, Friday night, and I guess they're expecting trouble. There's no trouble, but they're expecting it, so they have something like 25 cop cars just parked there waiting, and there's tourists everywhere, and we're just trying to find the train station, the Millennium train station. Where is this place? And I think we went in just about every direction possible looking for clues, looking for a single sign, and we found none. Thank goodness we had apps on our phones that could point us in various directions.
Even those, though, were seemingly at a loss when it really got to exact, you know, street level, when you're looking around and trying to find which door, and those aren't marked, and it just continues to create difficulty. There's this Millennium Plaza building, and I believe you actually found somebody at some point.
Yeah, well, you're going way ahead of the story here, because we're basically still on the street wandering around trying to figure out what you mentioned about the apps. They get out of their element many, many times, because, for instance, Google doesn't even, it refuses to call systems by their rightful names. For instance, in Chicago, it's called the L. In New York, it's called the subway. But no, in Google land, it has to be called Metro, even though nobody uses that word. So you have to look for these icons with M's on them when no such icon exists in this city, in New York, or in most places. So dealing with that, and of course, you know, if you're trying to look at something, it assumes you want to flip it the other way, and you don't, because you want to see the street as you're looking at it. It just gets really, really frustrating. It's like you're battling this artificial intelligence, and in the end, it's just pointing you in the wrong direction or misinterpreting what you're saying, giving you directions to a place in a different state. I just could go on forever and ever. But eventually, we tracked it down. We found the street address. That was really the only way to get anywhere, because there were no signs for it. And it was on I believe, North Michigan Avenue. Is that correct?
Yeah, you're right. It seemed to be this corner street, and we saw the giant numbers, and then of course the next number in the sequence was basically over the same door, so that in and of itself was a little confusing.
Yeah, it just looked like an office building, and it made no sense whatsoever, because it didn't say anything about a train station. What I did notice was that there was some kind of hotel with the word Millennium in it. And so we opened the door, went inside. One side just dead-ended to an elevator that didn't seem to go anywhere that was of interest to us. The other side went up some stairs into a hotel lobby. And so here we are in a hotel lobby, wondering where the train is. And I went up to the front desk, and I asked the guy there from a distance with a mask on, excuse me, where is the Millennium Station? And he's like, what? And the other guy just spoke up and said, oh, yeah, Millennium Station, that's you got to go outside and cross the street. And so that's basically, you know, you're called the Millennium, too. You'd think that Millennium Station would be something that you are very familiar with. But now, apparently, only in a blue moon are they asked about this. So one guy knew where it was. It was, you know, across the street, down the block a little bit. And so we went outside. And once again, you know, we're looking at all these nondescript buildings. Can't figure out which building is Millennium Station, thinking it's all some kind of big joke. And then we crossed the street, and there's this door with, you know, a few people came out of it. There's an escalator to the right. There's a long hallway down straight. Looks like it goes into an office building. There's some kind of weird symbol on top of the building. It looked like a target or something.
Well, kind of a compass rose.
All right,
but
whatever.
No direction.
And no words, nothing. No letters, nothing like that. So we went in there, and even after we went inside, we didn't know if we were in the right place or if we were allowed to be in there. And so then we went down this escalator, and as soon as we reached the bottom of the escalator, then we saw benches and corridors, and yeah, this is a train station. This is a hidden train station. It was completely unmarked, and not very many people in it at all. But there was no question that this was a train station of sorts. And we just kind of wandered around in amazement looking at this. You found the actual ticket desk for the South Shore line, and even found the schedule, which was pretty amazing.
It's true. And this hallway was all of kind of this stainless steel, brushed stainless rails and tubing. So you could tell maybe luggage and stuff, because they had it low on the ground to prevent you hitting these sort of futuristic glass storefronts. And it was basically an underground mall, like you describe. It just kept winding around. It was very fluid and curvy, and that desk was just there, but of course not a lot of signs telling you where to go to then get to the platform, except for when you go around sort of a corner and then you see the doors through which you get to the platform.
Yeah, and that was another weird thing. I think it was track 10, track 11, all these numbers. And you're wondering, what is track 1? There were probably about five or six tracks where we went. One of them had a long train on it, which apparently was the South Shore Line. I don't know if it was leaving soon. This was kind of, you know, it was getting late in the evening. It was about 8 o'clock. We just looked around trying to figure out what other activity happened in this place. And it was when we turned around to go back into the station proper from the tracks that we saw the first mention of Millennium Station. As you get off the train, you'll see a sign that says you're in Millennium Station. That's the only one I could find. That really is the only one. Apparently, also, it's a Metra stop, Metra being the commuter line here in Chicago. But that was taped off with like crime scene tape or something, and it wasn't running. So I don't know what the deal was with that. Different set of tracks in a different part of the station.
Indeed, and so this sort of dual-purpose station was really off the beaten path and an auxiliary. It felt like basically they were just barely able to get this this slot, but it felt new. A lot of it had it was very much like it had been remodeled or at least reinforced, being that it has low ceilings and is kind of a tight fit for the kind of commuters you imagine are coming in and out of that particular spot. But there were a few people waiting there. There were some automated machines, like I would say maybe 5 of them, as is typical in many of our, you know, subway stations and other facilities now that have user-friendly machines and the big touchscreen, all that. So it seems like people were able to use that without even really going in and talking to the ticket clerks themselves necessarily. They're still able to just sort of self-serve and go ahead and wait for whatever train, and or they just come in and eventually get out of the area there to get to the surface transportation, which itself, as you said, is right on the end of the park. It's in this very, very busy part of the city, and to get to the L is would be an incredible walk.
Well, I don't understand why they couldn't just put an L station there. You know, and I have a lot of questions. I'm sure I could just look this up somewhere, but this only just recently happened. I'm still kind of in shock. But Millennium Station sounds like something they named, you know, at the Millennium, around 2000. Was it called something else before that? Was this ever a main train station? Because Union Station, you know, where we are right now, it's pretty old. I think it's been around for a good long time, so it's hard to believe that another station preceded it, but I suppose it's possible. But, you know, signs, Chicago, you need more signs. Just to get here, just now, because we're about to get on a westbound Amtrak, to get to this particular station, there's no L anywhere near it, okay? I know they say the L stop known as Quincy connects to Amtrak. No, it doesn't connect to Amtrak, no more than it connects to New Jersey Transit. It's far away, and in addition to being far away, there are no signs pointing you in the right direction. So no matter how many times, and we have done this quite a few times now, you always wind up going the wrong way, at least for a little bit, and you get frustrated, wondering, okay, which way am I supposed to go? There's not a single sign anywhere. It's not a distinctive structure, so you can't really see it in the distance. And, you know, thank God we're not in a hurry, but boy, that's not a smooth connection. I don't know why there isn't some kind of a stop here at Union Station. That would be nice, but failing that, signs, please, for God's sake, signs pointing you in the right direction.
It absolutely is. It's so incredibly confusing and frustrating when you have bags you're not familiar or whatnot and you're trying to locate it. On top of that, LaSalle Station is nearby. So in the couple blocks the other direction from the loop, you could be going into a station that only serves that regional metro line, which is very confusing. It was only until we crossed the street and looked at the iron railing for the raised train platform for the loop, there was a placard pointing in the other direction, but you wouldn't have seen that coming off the stairs. And all you saw was LaSalle Station this way, and I was thinking, oh, they're nearby. Well, they're nearby in, like, Chicago terms. So you have to remember that it's an 8-minute walk, and you have to walk back over the river. And even by then, you're basically crossing over, and you're in a corner entrance that basically walks you all the way around the platforms, and then you can get into the Great Hall, which is incredibly complex. But there's only one other sign, and it was on the back of a parking sign when we got to the corner. And that was it until you cross over the bridge and you see a small that small corner entrance.
If you're not facing the right way, you won't see the sign ever. Look, it's this shouldn't even be a debate. It's not a connection. If your grandmother can't walk it, it's not a connection. And it takes a while to get there, and you have to know you're going in the right direction. Okay, so you mentioned the loop, and I want to just touch upon that for a second. We're not complaining because we love Chicago, had a great time here. There are just ways that things could be made so much easier if there was more signage and maybe a little bit more logic in certain places. For instance, the loop. Okay, that is part of the L system that basically goes around in a circle. And you can see the elevated structures. If you're in the middle of the loop, you see it on all four sides. And trains come in and leave at different parts of this circle. It's really awesome to watch. If you're at a train station and trains are stopping at your station and continuing on, you'll see other trains crossing perpendicularly to that at a 90-degree angle, down a little bit at full speed. It's something unheard of in New York, where a train will cross another train's tracks, but that's quite common here. And that's what the loop allows. But the loop also allows you to be completely confused and frustrated if you're trying to figure out how to get from one stop to another stop that's fairly nearby, because one of the first challenges that we had was trying to get on the Brown Line at that Quincy station and realizing it only seemed to go in one direction, but we wanted to go in the other direction, and there didn't seem to be an easy way to do that other than going all the way around. And it just, at some point, you just have to yield to what they tell you to do. Google, again, no help. They're telling you to go places that it's not possible to go. There was the Purple Line actually would have solved our problems, but the Purple Line only runs during rush hours. And that means you can only get from Station A to Station B one stop away from each other during rush hours. Otherwise, you have to go all the way around the loop on the Brown Line. Boy, it was something else. But nothing compares to what we went through one night while we were trying to get to another location. Chicago has a great deal right now on day passes, on actually 3-day passes and longer passes. They basically cut the price in half. So if you get a day pass, you've paid for it with two fares. So if you go someplace and come back, that's $5, and that's what a day pass costs. Usually it's $10. So we were heading out kind of late. It was, I think, around 8 o'clock at night. But we were going out to a particular location, and then, of course, we were planning on coming back. So it made sense. Let's get two day passes. That way, if we want to hop on a bus, we can do that as well. So we did that. We tried to do it anyway. Went to a machine and basically said we want to buy two day passes. It said, okay, give me payment method. And there was a bit of confusion with that, because it was rejecting things and accepting them. And then the keypad was sticking when it was asking for zip code verification and, the usual. And then finally we got to the point where it was giving us tickets. And then it said, one ticket canceled, refund issued, or refund slip issued, or something like that. Apparently what had happened was the ticket machine charged me for the two tickets and then ran out of tickets. So it was only able to give me one ticket, and then it gave me a piece of paper that said I was owed a refund. And of course that doesn't get you on the train. I've got my pass, but you've got a slip of paper saying that you're entitled to a refund. So we went up to the guy, and thank God for humans, especially in the CTA, the Chicago Transit Authority. They are the best. Just like Amtrak people, they help out so much, they work so hard, and they're a godsend. If they weren't around, we truly would have been miserable. So we showed it to this guy who's also probably has never seen anything like this before, and he said, wow, okay, that's different, that's interesting. I can let you on, but that doesn't help you later on. Show them this slip, and hopefully they're as reasonable as I am, or something like that. And we felt good about that. We felt good that we'd be taken care of in the future. So we got through the turnstile, got on the train. We're heading to where we wanted to go. And I saw a station where we could transfer to the blue line, which is the line we ultimately wanted to be on. But instead of going three more stops to get to the blue line, I saw an earlier transfer. I said, Kyle, let's get off here, transfer to the blue line a little bit early. So we did that. We followed the signs. And the signs led us downstairs from the elevated line to an exit turnstile. So apparently what you're supposed to do, and they don't tell you this, is leave the station and then enter another station and get a free transfer. Actually, they do tell you that, but they tell you that in icon language that you have to basically be a Chicago native to understand. So there's a difference between an actual transfer and a transfer that involves leaving a station and coming back in, where you need a working card. And since we were the only people probably around that did not have a working card in the system, that is exactly what wouldn't work for us. And even if we could convince somebody to let us in, we probably would have had to give up that slip, and then you'd have the same problem later on trying to get back. So all kinds of expletives were uttered. We had to go all the way back upstairs, wait for the next train. And that was another frustrating thing, because as soon as we got there, we saw the next train is due in a minute. Then it said less than a minute. Then it said 18 minutes. And so we basically had to wait there another 20 minutes to get another train to go to where we wanted to go. Made the transfer, went to the place we wanted to go to, got back, and it was such an easy conversation to have with the guy at that other station, saying, look, this is what happened. The other guy said this. And yeah, they understood. They did not give you any hassle whatsoever. So the humans definitely helped us out so much.
Yeah, they need a lot of support, and I think they maybe need some apprentices or some other help. I don't know if that's wanted or needed, but it seemed like there's more opportunity and more work to be done, and they're just stretched thin, or they're not getting enough resources to actually get that signage up or have clearer kind of diagramming for people that don't understand the system or don't remember it necessarily from the last time they were in town. And it really was a tall learning curve, I think, for anyone visiting these and using public transportation the way we were. It was so critical to really pay attention, and it really, if you're not on your toes at every turn, literally you could make a misstep that it'll lead you walking or missing a connection, making the wrong turn somewhere, and it pushes your night out and whatever your plans are by a really long time, unless you're careful.
Yeah, and you have to let go of it at some point. You have to realize, you know, this is an experiment. You're just basically trying something to see if it works, and you may get completely screwed up as a result and wind up in the wrong place, and that's part of the journey. That's part of the adventure. And I think we had the right kind of attitude as far as that went. So we were able to roll the punches, as it were, and figure out how to survive with the hands that we were dealt. I think we did all right. We got the day passes down, and I still don't really entirely understand how to maneuver in the loop. What kind of bugs me is... okay, there's a lack of maps, for one thing. I guess that's the same thing as a lack of signs. But, you know, in stations, maps are good to have, like, everywhere. Like they do in the New York subway, so that you can consult them. And there are some stations that don't have maps at all. There are some cars that don't have maps in them. It makes it very, very difficult. Another thing, there's Chicago Avenue, and every line that goes to Chicago Avenue labels the station Chicago. You know, okay, in New York City, you could say, well, there's a couple of different 28th streets. You know, there's the one on Lexington Avenue, there's the one on Broadway, or there's a couple 86th streets. There's, you know, stations with the same name, true. But they don't have the name of the city that they are in right now, which only further confuses things. So you have all these Chicago stations in Chicago. Make it even more fun. One of them is Chicago and Milwaukee, because it's the intersection of Chicago and Milwaukee. It just seems like they're trying. to confuse you at some points, and succeeding quite well. But again, you know, it's all stuff that we enjoy. We do. It can be frustrating, but it can also be enlightening. But we went to so many cool places in this city. We went to a shuffleboard club. I mean, how awesome is that? Imagine like a bar with pool tables, except instead of the pool tables, it's like three times bigger, and you have all these shuffleboard courts. Are they called courts? I don't know. And people are playing shuffleboard, you know, both inside and outside. And quite good at it, too, I might point out. There's all sorts of really, really fascinating old places and young culture, and they merge together really, really well. This is a city that is really working hard. I see a lot that, obviously, they deserve better. For instance, they're using the same subway cars that they've been using since the 80s and the 90s in many cases. And obviously, they deserve better infrastructure and just more investment. But you see how hard people are working and trying to build back after the pandemic. Help wanted signs up everywhere, as everywhere we've been so far. But people are really serious about wearing masks in the right places. You know, not so much outdoors, but inside stores, hotels, train stations. You don't see people complaining about it. It's basically they get it, and that's good to see. I wasn't sure, you know, in the Midwest, would people be, you know, as enlightened, and they certainly are here.
Yeah, and finding their own ways, whatever's comfortable, but doing the best they can to just keep their own distance, but also get on with things, and as you said, be working and lively and active as ever. You really get a vibrance and a great sense of excitement, and it's a very musical town. You can just feel it. You see people dancing on the platforms, you know, to their individual tunes or whatever, and you just can really soak up a little bit of friendliness too. I would say almost like people in Canada and so forth, but just in general, the Midwest is very welcoming, and I feel such positive things when I see the city. It's so well kept. There's just you know, things missing. There's you know, of course, homelessness everywhere, or people who are unhoused rather. And it's there's a dire situation, you can tell that, but there's also a lot of caring, I think, a lot of outreach and neighborliness. I don't know, people are taking care and looking out for one another, and yeah, we just feel like that. I feel like there was a lot of great memories made, even with the stress of finding our way for the basics of most basic of things, but I'm excited to see what other things develop in the city. I noticed they have a raised bicycle path. There's a lot of bike culture in Chicago. It's really taken off with, of course, people working on bicycles, much like you see in Manhattan and the boroughs of New York, but for pleasure as well, and to just be active and get around, maybe avoiding some of the hassles that we've been describing a little bit. That is exciting and cool to see. And I don't know, I've felt like I need to come back more, just to be more familiar, so we don't fall into some of these things and then in turn are able to spend more time enjoying what the city has to offer and exploring it, really, because there's just so many neighborhoods and so many streets and alleys. The alleys are incredible. I have a fondness for that, because you can just basically look down them for blocks and blocks, miles even, in some areas. And people many times cut through them, and they're in and of themselves a thoroughfare.
Can we talk about the alleys just a little bit? Because it's sort of part of another culture, which is the marijuana culture. Marijuana is now legal, completely legal in Illinois. In fact, we went to a dispensary, as we did in Massachusetts. That's another thing, taking the pulse of America. We're going to be checking out to see how different states are adapting. And what were your impressions of the dispensary we went to as compared to, I mean, to me, I said right away when we walked in, this is like a happy DMV, you know, because you had all these people online, but they're all chatting away, you know, wearing masks, of course, but everybody was in a good mood. And the efficiency, I mean, first of all, you show your ID to a guard at the door outside, then you walk in check in with somebody at a front desk who looks at your ID, you lower your mask for a second to make sure it matches, and then you walk into another room where you go to an iPad, I believe, which if you've already placed an order, you skip this part, but if you haven't placed an order, you go to the iPad and has a whole list of things, and you know, a friendly sales associate will come and help you, who is really knowledgeable. I was very impressed with, you know, all the nuances that she knew. And then you wait on this snaking line, you know, through, you know, like you're in a bank or something like that, and I guess you give them your order.
We pay first right after you've placed it. It appears they identify it with whatever name you used for that, and then you pay, then enter this set of lines. I believe it was three. And as you said, it's all of these stations and all these employees really keep it, keep the traffic moving in one direction, in and out. And from that point, you basically wait for your name to be called.
Yeah, and then they call your name, and you take what you bought, and then you exit through a different door, and then you're in one of those alleys. But that's not usually where you smoke, but people do smoke in alleys. But it's kind of difficult, you know. It's kind of difficult to know where you're supposed to go. You're not supposed to smoke at all on public property, only on private property. But if you don't live there, where do you go? It's again more difficult than it needs to be. But it's nothing compared to if you say go to the next state over in Wisconsin, where even possession of a joint can land you in jail for 6 months. So it's really, the marijuana culture is almost as confusing as the Chicago L system. But it's, you know, I was very impressed with the organization, though, of that particular dispensary we went to, and I imagine they're all like this as well. So many jobs opened up. There must have been about 20, 25 people working in that place. And they all really seem to know their stuff. And the clientele is just super happy to be there.
Yeah, many people just going about their days and of all stripes, just basically picking up and getting their weekend going or getting on with their other errands. And that itself, I think, lowers the anxiety around it. Of course, all the checking is important, and the products were all from in-state and labeled very comprehensively. And it was a really very high quality, very high potency, and incredible friendliness, and just, yeah, like you said, informative, and a sense of it being quite normal. But the strictures and ways to consume and the circumstances and in various ways that plays out, I think it makes it very confusing, and especially when you're talking about the rest of the country.
Well, but as you said, all different stripes of people, all different ages, older people, younger people. It's not just a bunch of kids or anything like that. And you also said they're getting the weekend started. I think we went on, was it Wednesday or Thursday? I think all throughout the week people are going to places like this. But the other fascinating thing, and I just realized this now, not once. We've seen homelessness, we've seen all kinds of people in different stages of life. We've seen the good, we've seen the bad, but I don't think in a single case anyone ever offered to sell us drugs or try to sell us drugs. And I think that just speaks to all this concern about what happens when dispensaries open up in your neighborhood. I mean, it seems to have cleaned that part of the culture up quite a bit, because there's no call for that at all. And if you're selling drugs in the street, well, you got to be selling drugs to kids. And that makes it really, really easy to clamp down.
And even if you do notice people consuming perhaps in places that are technically not the best place or allowed, so to speak, there's a lot of discretion. I think people themselves don't really know. Some people more than others are comfortable when outside and of course near their place of residence, et cetera, et cetera. And I did notice, you know, many people just catching up with friends or whatever, sitting on the corner. Same, you know, exactly the same, mm-hmm. just like we see in other cities. And that's a very relaxing and calming effect. I think that has that, it reinforces that sort of adult nature and takes away, I think, some of the stigma and so forth. And I feel like, you know, you're around it and people tend to just give others space if they notice or something. But it certainly wasn't like blatant or out of control or anything. And like you said, not anything mentioned in public or outside of a retail place like we talked about.
Yeah, they seem to have gotten it together, both with that, with the COVID preparations. Everyone is dealing with it, and it doesn't seem to be affecting their mood in any way. They're living their lives and being as productive as possible, which I think is almost as close to normal as you can expect. One other thing we almost forgot to mention is that today was the running of the Chicago Marathon, which honestly I didn't know there was a Chicago Marathon until we heard about it a couple of days ago, and then today we happened to see a bunch of runners. In fact, they might still be going. We went over to Chinatown. I didn't know they had a Chinatown either. And there were people, they weren't really running at that point. They were kind of walking, maybe walking a little fast. But they were, I think they're the most interesting people, the ones that finished towards the end. No news media covering them, but lots of their friends and their relatives holding signs and cheering them on. And I think that's really awesome. So the whole city was pretty much ground to a standstill because of that. Roads were closed. There was all kinds of traffic and pedestrians outside waving at the runners going by. And the amazing thing is, I didn't realize this either, the Chicago Marathon is one day before the Boston Marathon. So, wow, there are people who are running in both, which, you know, to me, taking a plane from Chicago to Boston, that's enough exertion right there. But these people are running a marathon, taking a plane to Boston, and then running another marathon. Boy, I don't know how they do it, but we picked a good time to come. Well, actually, the conference happened. That's why we came here at this particular time. And, you know, ThoughtCon, amazing conference. Hadn't been to one before. It's a hacker conference, well worth supporting. Indicative of the many, many outlets in the hacker community that are there. And I think this... well, for me anyway, I know this was the first major conference I've been to since the outbreak, probably the biggest event I've been through since the outbreak. Everyone was taking precautions, wearing masks, and checking to make sure everyone was vaccinated. Nobody felt that was a violation in any way. I gave a talk. In fact, when I mentioned that you know, we as a community believe in science, got applause. And that really was moving to me, because that means something when people celebrate science in that way and realize, no, they're not being manipulated, not being taken advantage of. They're doing what's right, what's logical, what's necessary. And it may not be what you want to do, but oftentimes that's how it works. And we're being grown-ups and trying to get past all of this. And with that kind of effort, with that kind of knowledge, maturity, we will get past that. And that's what I'm hoping to see as we continue to explore other parts of the country.
Absolutely. And I just realized there's so many interesting people and that are unique and probably a little more quirky and interesting than you might ever have imagined. It really kind of warmed my heart to people watch a little bit and see people going about their lives and at the event, coming up and telling us about some of the things they're working on, what they're excited about, maybe acknowledging some of the things we do. And of course, your talk was a really powerful, and I think that a lot of people heard you and got what you were saying. So it just I think was well received, and we had just such a good time going to some of the events and seeing how they're doing things differently than maybe we do at events, and just being attendees and checking out the cool logos and badges they've put together, the games and sort of puzzles in the program. Very much the stuff we are familiar with when we do Hope. So great job. I want to be more familiar and see people that are doing different things in a place like this and stay connected, definitely. And of course, there are people from all over, and that ended up rekindling some old acquaintances. We were able to just catch up or reintroduce, to people maybe you thought you met somewhere. That's mm-hmm. always the best. And sometimes you remember a story or something that you're able to share and break the ice a little bit. And all of us having come from such a cutoff year of sort of solitude, it just felt new. And I think people were really, really extra thrilled to be just in the presence of others and just share. And people were giving people, I think, space, giving them a break, obviously giving space, but in sort of an emotional way too. I think letting people, find their comfort level, do the activities that they were interested in, and interact, with maybe the group of the people they came with, or, daringly with new folks. Who knows? But it just, there was that excitement of, yeah, we remember how to do this. And that was really special.
It was. It really was. And it also shows how you can have fun even while the pandemic is still happening. You take precautions, keep some windows open, do things outside, give people space, continue to wear the mask, make sure you're vaccinated. It sounds like a lot, but it really isn't a lot. And it makes it possible to do things like this and to live as normal a life as possible until we get to the point where it's over. And more people like this, it will be over. So I hope, I haven't really checked the news much in the last few days, and thankfully not, because I always get frustrated when I do. But I know that this level of maturity is not true everywhere in the country, and I think we'll probably see some signs of different ways of thinking in different parts of the country. And we'll deal with that objectively, and we'll try and understand different viewpoints and things like that. But for right now, it's really difficult to not see the logic of taking the precautions and staying healthy and trying to beat this thing, because that's what we really all should want. Final thoughts on Chicago, as we've talked pretty much the whole hour about this amazing city. I think this might be the longest I've ever spent here, and I feel like I really got a lot out of it. Did a lot of walking, did a lot of exploring, and just saw a lot of really cool different things.
Yeah, I always have a familiarity, and I felt that this time. It's a beautiful place, and I'm just in awe here in the Great Hall talking to you, and it went so quickly, and there's just so many other, as I said, other things to explore, and I want to be able to come back, and every time I'm here, I feel a sense of home, a sense of welcome, and that this, it's that cool intersection with so much interesting stuff as far as culture and food and music. There's a reason Amtrak's train stations ended up intersecting and having a hub here in Chicago historically. So that kind of thing is everywhere when you're in the middle of the country. That's really special. It's a magical, magical place. The weather couldn't have been better.
Well, it's not entirely true, because there was a major thunderstorm, but it didn't hit us. we were fortunately inside when this happened. But I heard rumors of severe weather coming in the next couple of days. But yeah, it's, for the most part, it's been pleasant.
Well, sure, and I love a good downpour. So. And getting a one that's local is that's also a good reminder of the kinds of things the city can throw your way. It's a tough town. It's a big town. It's busy, but I really, truly love it. I can't wait to be back through.
And there's a certain type of sincerity that I see in the Midwest. It's hard to describe, but people are just, I don't know, they seem realer somehow. And it's good to talk to them. It's good to just have good, honest conversation with them. You might think there are major differences, and many times there are differences, disagreements, and things like that, but there's this inherent goodness that I feel coming to the surface more often than not. And that's something I saw again this time in Chicago. Anyway, we got to get out of here. Our train is about to show up here in the Great Hall. And you know what? We're not actually that near the tracks. Even though we're in the Great Hall, you have to walk down a corridor to get to the tracks. It's really, you know, I wish I recorded this. But there, if you ever walk past the tracks in Chicago's Union Station, there's a recording that just keeps repeating the track number, track three, track three. And it just sounds so Blade Runner-ish. And of course, you know, unless you're standing still, you will hear different numbers. So it'll be track two, track two, track three, track three. I don't think you need to do that. I really don't think that's necessary. I find it super annoying and a little scary. That's my closing thought. I don't know where we'll be next week or who we might be talking to. So it's always a surprise.
Far from here.
Indeed. All right, this edition of Off the Wall has come to an end. Write to us, otw@2600.com, and we'll see you next week. Good night.
Take care.
Sometimes scream. My friends, Finn's Revolution with you on WUSB Stony Brook, right here on these airwaves and 90.1 FM. And tonight we're going to have Grant Curry with us from Flood Twin, brand new record, super rockin' and super cool sounding. And then after that, our good friend Sarah McQuaid shall be discussing her brand new live, ethereal, gorgeous, beautiful new record. Stay tuned. Song is brand new from Flood Twin right here on WUSB Stony Brook. We'll be right back. Yeah, brand new from Flood Twin on their self-titled release, Flood Twin, and that's called Silence. And in just a few moments, the bass player and key songwriter and vocalist for the band shall be joining us live on the air. We're going to hear something else from Flood Twin right now. This is called Break Your Heart from the new release, self-titled Flood Twin, Grant Curry, up right after this tune.